This morning. You'll find this on page number 4 in the book. If you'll turn the book over to page 4 and read along, we'll look at the proposition and analyze it briefly and then try to prove this from the scriptures. Proposition number 3. The scriptures teach that an assembly of the Church of Christ for the communion must use one cup, which means a drinking vessel, in the distribution of the fruit of the vine. By the word scriptures teach, that is, after reading the scriptures, the reader gains knowledge that Jesus used only one cup, which means a drinking vessel, and that only one drinking vessel was commanded to be used, and only one drinking vessel can fit the description offered in the scriptures. You'll gain that knowledge by reading the scriptures. Now, by must use, I mean that it's mandatory. It's essential. It is required. Sin is committed by using more than one drinking vessel. One drinking vessel was commanded by the Lord. One cup is required because the Lord gave it as an example, and he intended that this part of his example be followed by his disciples for all future assemblies. He commanded it. Number 3, one cup, we mean drinking vessel. That is, one and only one container must be shared by each disciple in the assembly. Number 4, in the distribution of the fruit of the vine. By this, we learn that the cup is not empty, but it contains fruit of the vine. We're not talking about an empty cup. This proposition in itself says there's fruit of the vine in it, and it's going to be distributed from this one drinking vessel. An empty cup cannot be used, neither can fruit of the vine only be used. And we'll talk about that a little bit. The fruit of the vine must be contained in one drinking vessel and distributed to the audience in one vessel. In summary, then, here is the burden of proof that lays on me this morning. I must show 4 things. A, that Jesus himself used only one drinking vessel. B, that he commanded his disciples to use and share one drinking vessel. C, that one drinking vessel was consistently used in apostolic times with no deviation. And number D, that one drinking vessel is a significant part of the communion service. It must be done in this fashion because the Lord wanted it done in this fashion. Now that's the burden of proof that I've got this morning. I'm going to try to prove this to you from the scriptures. And I want you to follow on because I believe with all of my heart that everything that I have just said can be backed up by scripture. And I want you to follow along and see if that's not the case. The only shred of hope that Brother Donahue has this morning to try to disprove what I'm saying, the only breath of a hope that he's got is to try to prove from the Bible that the word cup doesn't mean cup. That's the only breath of hope he's got. The only thing he can possibly do is to try to prove that the word cup does not either directly or indirectly refer to the drinking vessel. That's his Herculean job, is to try to disprove that this word doesn't even indirectly refer to a drinking vessel. And that's what he's going to have to do to disprove this proposition, because everything I'm reading to you came from the scriptures. All right, everybody turn your book open now to page number 6. Proving one cup is essential. Now notice here at the top of the page, to prove one cup, or which means a drinking vessel. One cup, a drinking vessel. To prove that this is essential, 4 things must be shown. A, that Jesus himself used only one drinking vessel. B, that he commanded his disciples to use and share one drinking vessel together. C, that one cup was consistently used in apostolic times with no deviation to the pattern. Number D, that one drinking vessel is a material, significant part of the communion service. The Lord's Supper must be observed in this fashion because the Lord wanted it done this way and no other way. That's what I've got to show. Now let's start with this first one. Did Jesus use only one drinking vessel? In Matthew 26, verse 27, he took the cup, gave thanks, gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." I want you to notice, first of all, that there was some drinking done by Jesus. There was some drinking done. The fact that he was drinking tells us that he was drinking a liquid. Now, the liquid he was drinking was fruit of the vine. Fruit of the vine comes in 2 forms. It comes in the form of a solid, either in the form of grapes or raisins. That's fruit of the vine. Or it can come in a liquid form in the form of grape juice. Now, when Jesus took the fruit of the vine, page 7, when he took it in his hands, we know that it was in liquid form because he drank it. He did not eat it. If it had come in solid form, the Bible would have said he ate the fruit of the vine. He didn't eat grapes. He didn't eat any raisins. He drank, so it came in a liquid form. Now, the second thing, he commanded the disciples to drink from it, all of you. So it was in liquid form for him to drink, and he gave liquid to them to drink, and so it was in liquid form. Now, in liquid form, grape juice must have a container. You have to have a container. You have to have at least one container, at least one, to do what Jesus said, because it's a liquid, and a liquid has to have a container. Now, we know Jesus used the container then because of the very nature of liquids. Very little is known about this specific container, but we do know a few things. Point number A, it was a container that was small enough for Jesus to pick up with his hands and pass around to others. Now, we know this much because he took it, he blessed it, and he gave it to his disciples, and it was small enough to pick up and pass around. Now, sometimes I've heard brethren say that in order for large congregations to have just one cup, they'd have to use a 55-gallon barrel. Well, that's ridiculous. We know Jesus didn't use a cup that big that you can't pick up a 55-gallon barrel with your hands and pass it around to somebody if it's full of liquid. Why, you probably couldn't even pick it up if it was empty. So we know it was small enough to pick up. Number B, it was a container that was ordinarily used at a dining table to drink from, because after all, Jesus was sitting at a table, at a dining table, eating a meal with his disciples, and so it was a container ordinarily used at a dining table. Now, the container he used was called a cup. The word cup comes from the Greek noun, poterion. It means a cup, a drinking vessel, according to Thayer. It means a cup, a drinking vessel, according to Art and Ebert's lexicon. Now, I want everybody to hold your finger here. We'll come back to this page, but look on page 109. On page 109, here are some written questions that I sent to Brother Donahue 2 months ago, and I want you to listen to his response to the very first question at the top of the page. Page 109, question 1. When Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, did he use a literal drinking vessel? Donahue's reply is, in all likelihood, he did use a container. In all likelihood. You talk about a man hedging. Did Jesus have one or not? Well, in all likelihood, I think he did. All right, look at the next part. If so, if he did have a container then, if so, was the word cup ever used in the scriptures to refer directly or indirectly to a drinking vessel? Does this word cup ever directly or even indirectly refer to a drinking vessel? You know what his reply is? I don't think so. In all likelihood, Jesus had a drinking vessel, but I don't think that the word cup ever refers to it even indirectly. You know why he's taking such a ridiculous position as this? Because he knows that if cup means a cup, then he's not doing it the way the Bible says. So the only prayer of the hope he's got is to convince us that the word cup doesn't mean a cup. So he has to say, yes, in all likelihood, Jesus probably used a drinking vessel, but we have no idea what it was ever called. Because it wasn't the word cup doesn't refer to it even indirectly. All right, now turn the page over now to page number 111. Look at question number 5. Question number 5. Metonymy is defined as a figure by which one name or noun is used instead of another to which it stands in a certain relation. Please answer the following questions about this sentence. As often as you drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Alright, question A. What object is being named when Paul wrote, drink this cup? Donahue's reply, a container. How about that? When the Bible said, drink this cup, he said the word cup means what? He said the word cup means a container. I thought he just said in question 1 that the word cup doesn't even indirectly refer to a container. Not even indirectly. Now in question 5, when we read the sentence, drink this cup, the word cup means a container. Now, all right, look at question B. What is being suggested? Drink the cup, the word cup means container, but what's being suggested? Well, he writes fruit of the vine, and that's right. the cup, the container is being named, and it's suggesting the fruit of the vine be drunk from the cup. Right? Noticing what relationship is sustained between the thing named and the thing suggested. You're naming one thing to suggest something else. What relationship is there between the thing you name and the thing you're suggesting? His reply, a cup may contain liquid. Wow! He's telling us in the first question the word cup doesn't even indirectly refer to a drinking vessel. Now he's saying the word cup means a container and it contains a liquid. I'm telling you what, now Jesus took liquid. It had a container. The container was called a cup, and that means a drinking vessel. Now, the fact that the cup is singular, look back on page 7 now, the last little paragraph there before the footnotes. The fact that the cup is singular in all references to the Lord's Supper proves that only one singular drinking vessel was used by the Lord. Look on page 8, number 8. He picked up only one cup. Now, that word cup means container, according to Brother Donahue now, depends on which question you're asking him. Depends whether his garb's up or not. It means a container. Jesus took only one cup or container in his hand. Matthew 26, 27. He gave thanks for only one cup in its contents. Matthew 26 and verse 27. And he gave only one cup to his disciples. Matthew 26, verse 27. All right, number 2. Did Jesus command his disciples to drink from only one drinking vessel? Was this ever commanded? Look at Matthew 26 and verse 27. He took the cup, gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. There's the command. He took one drinking vessel. He gave thanks for the one drinking vessel with its contents, and he gave it to them, and he commanded them, drink from it, all of you. They all had to drink from it. All right, number 3. Did they understand? Let's look at Mark 14, verse 20. Did they understand what Jesus meant? Did they do what he said? Mark 14, verse 23. He took the cup, and when he'd given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. He commanded them to drink from the one drinking vessel he gave them, and they all drank from it. They knew exactly what he meant. And there's a divine example of how to do what Jesus commanded. Number 3. Was one cup used consistently by churches and disciples during apostolic times? The answer is yes. In every single reference available in the New Testament, a consistent pattern is seen. Only one cup was shared by all the disciples in the assemblies that they communicated. Number 8, Matthew says there was only one cup used, Matthew 26, 27 to 29. Mark says only one cup was used, Mark 14, 23 to 25. Luke says only one cup was used, Luke 22, 17 to 20. Paul says only one cup was used, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 16 to 17, and 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23 to 29. No deviation in the pattern. Number 4, is one drinking vessel a material significant part of the communion service? Must it be done in this fashion? The divine record reveals that one and only one cup is significant. Here's why. I've got four reasons on the next page why one drinking vessel is significant. Number 8, at least one cup is essential because being in liquid form, fruit of the vine must have a cup to contain it. The cup is essential because you have to have it to contain liquid, and that's what Jesus had, a liquid. Number 3, one cup is essential because Jesus commanded it. Matthew 26, verse 27. He said, take this and drink from it, all of you. That's a positive law. That's a positive commandment. Number 3, one cup is essential because the word communion means participation, sharing in something. The Bible says that when we drink from the cup, we're having communion. Communion means to share something with others. Now, point number 1. If a disciple brought his own supper to the services and ate what he brought without sharing, that disciple did not have communion. This, among other things, is what the apostle condemned in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 21. He said, you people are bringing your own supper and you're not eating the Lord's supper. Some are eating and drinking and some are going without. So if you bring your own supper, your own elements, and you take your own supper, you're not having communion. You're just eating your own meal. And true communion means you're sharing something with one another. Number 2, true communion means being together and sharing something among others. Right. When plurality of loaves are used, some disciples share some loaf together and others share another, but they're not sharing with each other the same loaf. They're not having true communion. They're not sharing together. When plurality of cups are used, the disciples that drink from the same cup are sharing something with each other, but they're not sharing with those who drink from another cup. When individual wafers and individual cups are used, no disciple is sharing anything with anyone else. Each disciple is merely eating his own supper. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 21, that ought to bother you. When everybody has their own little cup and their own little wafer, and each person's eating their own little meal, they're eating their own supper, they're not eating the Lord's supper. Number three, one cup is essential, not only because you have to have it to contain liquid, not only because Jesus commanded it, not only because it fulfills the true meaning of communion, but number three, one cup is essential because the cup itself represents something. It represents the new covenant which God made with mankind. Look at Luke 22, verse 20. Likewise, he also took the cup after saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood." Look at that. He said the cup is something. He said the cup is the New Testament or the New Covenant which was ratified by my blood. Look on the next page, page 10, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 25. In the same manner also he took the cup after supper saying, "This cup is the New Covenant in my blood." The cup itself, the container itself, with food and wine in it, when it has prayer offered for it during the communion assembly, it represents the New Testament which Jesus purchased with his own blood. Now look on the bottom of the page, a symbol of the covenant. Every major covenant that God made with mankind had a symbol to represent it. Number eight, the covenant with Noah had a symbol. God gave him the rainbow in Genesis chapter 9. And he said, when you see that rainbow, that is a sign of the agreement that I have made with you that I will not destroy the world with a flood again. Number three, the covenant he made with Abraham had a symbol so people could remember the covenant they had with God. And that symbol was circumcision, Genesis chapter 17. The covenant with Israel also had a symbol so that Israel could remember their relationship, their covenant relationship with God, and it was circumcision, Leviticus 12 and verse 3. Well, the new covenant with spiritual Israel also has a symbol so that people can remember we are in a covenant relationship with God, and that is the cup or container in the communion service. Luke 22 and verse 20, 1 Corinthians 11 verse 25. Now, while the grape juice symbolizes the price that was paid to bring in the New Testament, the cup symbolized the new covenant itself. And since God made only one covenant with his people, we must have only one cup on the Lord's table so that we can remember the one covenant that we've got with God. We don't have an individual covenant with God. That ended in the days of the patriarch. Now we have one covenant for all of God's people. And we have only one cup on the table to represent it. And when individual cups are put on the table, it destroys the symbolism which God intended. Now look at the cup and its contents compared to the blood, blood and the covenant. Point number eight, a liquid is incomplete without a container. If you've just got a liquid with no container, it's an incomplete picture. And when you've got, number eight, the blood of Christ, it's incomplete without a new covenant. The blood of Christ shed would have done us no good if there had not been a new covenant brought in whereby we could be saved. Now, number three, a container is incomplete without a liquid. Number B, a new covenant is incomplete without the blood of Christ. If there were no blood shed, the new covenant would be meaningless. Now, because the new covenant is inseparable from the blood which ratified it, God chose two items that are also inseparable to symbolize his divine scheme of redemption, a cup and its contents. You cannot separate the contents from its container, just like you cannot separate the new covenant from the blood of Jesus which brought the new covenant in. And so God chose an object that was inseparable. You cannot separate the contents from the cup itself any more than you can separate the New Testament from the blood that ratified it. That's why we must have one. Now look at the bottom of page 11. One loaf symbolizes the body of the Lord. He had one and only one physical body and only one spiritual body. Therefore, we must use only one loaf, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 16 and 17. More than one loaf destroys the symbolism. Fruit of the vine symbolizes the blood of Christ, and on page 12, one cup symbolizes the one new covenant between God and his people, Luke 22, verse 20, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 25. More than one cup destroys the symbolism which God intended that his people see every time they gather to eat the Lord's Supper, not their own supper. I thank you for your attention.
before they start the time, let me say I appreciate the congregation here hosting this space for today. Appreciate George being willing to discuss the Bible. Appreciate y'all coming a whole lot.
I hope you listened attentively to George's speech. I have a lot of ground to cover. I gave Tommy a list of 18 charts that I want to cover. I made those charts, my charts that I was going to go along. As I heard his speech, I made a list of 18 charts that I had to cover. I'll get to as many of them as I can, but Tommy knows that I won't be able to get to all of them. George started off by telling the four things he had to prove, and I don't see much disagreement there. I have a list on one of my charts that I hope to get to in his speech where I had a list, had broken down the three things he had to prove. And they're very similar to the way George had it. The first thing he said that he had to prove was, did Jesus only use one drinking vessel? And he talked about the cup being a cup. Yes, he must prove that Jesus only used one drinking vessel. And you cannot prove that he did. And I'll explain why in just a moment. I believe there's probably at least a 50, 60, 70% chance that Jesus did start out with only one drinking vessel, that he started with that. But I don't know that. He may have started with more than that. He may have started with more, but you can't be sure about what the Bible says, the text, and we're going to show why. But since you can't be sure of that, you can't find that. Then we're going to go on from that, that even if he did have only one drinking vessel to start with, there is no way you can know that all the disciples, the 12 disciples, put their lips to that one drinking vessel to drink from. For example, we'll get into this more later, I'll give you a Bible illustration. When you go to Pizza Hut with a group of friends, and they give you a pitcher of Coke, if you got five people, you all drink of that pitcher. But you don't all put your lips to it. You drink of, eat the pitcher by first pouring it into your own glasses and then drinking. And the disciples could very well have done that. We just don't know. The text does not say. But now he talked about the cup meaning a cup, and what he meant by that was the cup means a container. Because if you see metonymy being used, then as the definitions go, and Ethan Thayer said this, if metonymy is being used, you name the cup or the container to refer to the contents of the container. And so even though you name the container, what is really being talked about and referred to if metonymy is being used? The contents. For example, if you say, I had my favorite dish, I ate my favorite dish for lunch yesterday, went to Hardee's and ate fried chicken, did you eat the platter, the dish, or did you eat the contents? The chicken. The chicken. You see, even though you name a dish a platter, you're not even talking about the dish, really. As a matter of fact, it might have been on the napkin. It might not have been a dish there, but you'd still call it my favorite dish. Even if there was no dish within a country mile of that thing, I mean a literal dish, you'd still be referring to the content, and the container might not have even been there. And so I believe in every case you see the word cup referred to in the communion passages, it's referring to the contents, and there's no way to prove that the container's even being referred to. Now, depends on what you mean by referred to. Of course, a container is being named, but is that what's being talked about? When I say my favorite dish is fried chicken, I'm naming a platter, but I'm not talking about the platter. As I said, the platter may not be within a mile of it. I'm talking about the food, fried chicken. So the question will be, when we see the word cup, this is one of the questions, and we're dealing with this, did Jesus only use one drinking vessel? When we see the word cup, does it refer to the container or the contents? So Tommy put up my number 17. First of all, George read a definition for this word cup from Thayer. Now, I've seen this done to other one cup brethren before. They read one definition, but they don't read all the definitions given, and then they apply the wrong definition to the passages. The definition for the word cup is like the definition for the word head in a way. Watch. If you look at Random House, you find this definition. The upper part of the body of man is only trumped by the neck, the brain, eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. But a synecdoche, similar to metonymy, but not exactly the same, synecdoche definition would be a person or animal considered merely as one of a number of herds or breeds, 10 head of cattle, a dinner, so much head. In other words, I have 10 head of cattle. I'm not really referring to their head. It's just a synecdoche. But you see, if you were to take this definition and apply the cases of this, then somebody could have 10 head of cattle, you'd think, well, they just had 10 heads out there on the grass, the pasture. But you're applying the wrong definition to some cases. You can't apply the first definition to the example for the second, for one making sense. Now, raise it up a little bit. Like the definition for the word dish, here's where we get to metonymy, Random House. An open, more or less shallow container of pottery, glass, etc. But here's why I picked this illustration of the dish, and I'm going to use it today. Because normally a container for a liquid is a cup or a glass or something like that. What is the parallel of that? The closest parallel I could give was the container of the food that you eat, and that's the dish. The dish literally is something like a platter you eat up. And so I use that because both dish and cup are used in a metonymical, I don't know if that's the right word, the correct word, sense, many times. Now here's the metonymy definition for dish. A particular article or preparation of food, for example, rice is an inexpensive dish. You see, there's another definition. That doesn't have anything to do with the platter, does it? That's the thing that would be on the platter, though it does not have to be on the platter. It could be on the table. But the point, the main point is there is no real reference to the platter here. When you say a Chinese dish or a rice is an inexpensive dish, you're referring to the contents and the contents only. If you eat a dish, what do? Do you eat the platter? Do you eat the platter and the food, or you just eat the fluid food? And so when you eat the dish, you're just eating the food, and when you drink the cup, you're just drinking the contents. It's referring to the contents only. Otherwise, you have a cup split in two. Now that's just the truth about the matter. And so one cup, brothers, similarly apply the wrong definition of any case. Notice some ungiven definitions for cups. He didn't give this. But you can ask yourself, why did he give them? Here's some other definitions. Here's one given by failure. He says, by the economy of the container that you contain, the contents of the cup, what is ought to be drunk. Some of the contents, he gives Luke 22:20, which he refers to when he says the cup of the New Testament. Okay? Now, of course, that's failure of opinion. What verse applies that definition? But here's a definition. 1 Corinthians 11:25. Here's another guy, just got his initials, E.G. The economy of a cup or the contents of a cup. Okay? So, it's talking about the contents. You name the container, that's where the economy works, to refer to the contents. Now, we're going to get a lot into it, I'm sure, about whether if you name one container, does that suggest only one, the contents of only one container? That will be his rule. That rule, a lot of debate will hinge on that, and I'm going to show you that rule is just as wrong as it can be. And he had that rule in the book here, and he read it, and I'm going to get to it in a minute. I want to know the name of the one-cup brother who originally made up the rule that if you name one container, then by metonymy, you must be only referring to the contents of one container. I want to know the name of the one-cup brother who made up that rule originally. Because I can show you on my chart 10 examples where that rule is not true. We're going to get to that in a minute. I believe if you gave me a year, I could think of 100. If you gave me 10 years, I could think of 1,000 examples that violate that rule. So I want to know the one-cup brother who made up that rule originally. Marty Gingrich, I don't know if you refer to him, but here's a one that is by metonymy for what it contains. He gives Luke 22:20. Till, nevertheless, the second element in the Lord's Supper is almost always called the cup rather than wine. In the New Testament, refers not to the cup, he means by that container. For not the container, but its contents. Okay? You must determine by the context if the literal meaning or the metonymy meaning should be used. And I believe that actually it cannot be proven that the word cup is ever used in the literal sense, I mean by that no metonymy, in any of the communion passages, not even one time. Let's move on. Everybody turn to page 111 in his book and look at point B. Hope I can turn there real fast. His number 5 question at the top, he asked me the question, what object is being named? And I said a container. Of course, you can name the container even though you're not referring to the container as such. Like I can say my favorite dish is fried chicken. Now, I'm not talking about the platter. Most of the times I eat fried chicken, I don't eat it off the platter when I go to Arby's. What is being suggested? Fruit of the vine. That's B part. George said, that's right. Fruit of the vine, that's exactly what I'm saying. Tommy put up number 39. So George agreed that at least in this case, the word cup refers to fruit of the vine. Why? Because as often as you drink this cup, that's in 1 Corinthians 11. So as often as you drink this cup, why? He knows it's referring to fruit of the vine because it refers to the container. Here's what would happen. A man would drink the cup, look what's inside of his belly after he gets food. You have the container, and I guess these little lines represent the contents too. You have container and contents. So he knows when you drink this cup is not referring to the container at all. The only thing you drink is the contents. You do not drink the container in any sense. Luke 22, neither do you divide the container in any sense. So when it says drink it, that is the cup in Luke 22, that is only talking about the contents, only the contents. Not container and contents, or not container only the contents, that's the only thing that's divided. When you drink the cup, it's only referring to the contents. And George agreed with me. He said it's referring to the fruit of the vine. Now let's get to that rule. Turn to page 7. Now here's where that rule becomes important. He has a rule, you see,
Now, page 7, he read this, about two-thirds of the way down, he says, the fact that cup is singular. Now, cup in the communion passage refers to the contents. But he says, the fact that cup is singular in all references to the Lord's Supper proves that only a singular drinking vessel was used by the Lord. No, that's not true. This is very important. Show it, Bob.
John 4. No, that's not the right one. One cup of Tommy rule, that's number 25. This is one cup of Tommy rule, number 4. This is one of the four rules I found in the debate book that they made up. Not true. Here's one cup of Tommy rule, number 4. This was in Malcolm Bibson, this gospel name. Here's the way he expressed it. Since one cup was named, the contents of only one cup are suggested. That's the rule. Irving Waters said the same thing on page 80 of the former Waters debate. Now, I would like to know who's the one cup brother who made up this rule originally. I don't know that. Do y'all know the name of the one cup brother who made up this rule? I don't know that. And if you don't, just tell me he made it up. You know, he came up with the first time. Okay? Let me give you some examples that show that this rule is absolutely false. See, here's the main argument. They say, yeah, Tommy's there sometimes. Matter of fact, I have a chart where he's admitted 4, 5, or 6 times in the communion passage. You have the cup referred to as Tommy. Their rule is, though, but if you're talking about the content, if only one container is named to refer to the content, then only the content of one container is suggested. That's just not true. For example, Matthew, I believe that's 18:16. I have 16:18. The Bible talks about how to confirm things in the mouth 2 or 3 witnesses. Now you have the word mouth, it's used metonymously. Container for the content. You're not actually talking about the mouth, but you're talking about the words that come from the mouth. Another says, it says 2 or 3 witnesses, according to their rule, but have it said in the mouth of 2 or 3 witnesses. But it doesn't. It says in the mouth. See, the rule is just not true. You only name one container to suggest the contents of more than one container. The four waiters serve the Chinese dish at the football banquet. The four waiters serve the Chinese dish at the football banquet. Now, only one container is named there. But the contents of how many platters or literal dishes are there? How many do you think? Can you tell? It's probably more than one, isn't it? Probably more than one, or it wouldn't have taken four to do it. But the fact is, you can't tell. It could have been one. It could have been all four of them came around just one dish, one platter. But you can't tell, because they served the Chinese dish. You can't tell how many containers are there. Just because the word dish is singular, that means you can tell how many containers are there, because the dish here is used metonymically. Okay? I'll give you another example. In football, you use the bench to refer to the substitutes in a football game. You say, boy, they sure had a strong bench. But you know, in the football, in Alabama football, I went to, they had more than one bench there. Literal bench. They had 3 or 4 benches sitting out there because sometimes they have 80 players who didn't start. So the bench referred to the substitutes, but you didn't say they had a strong benches. They never said it that way. But the container, the benches, were always plural, but they never said they had a strong benches. They always said they had a strong bench, singular, but they were always referring to the contents of more than one literal bench. This rule is not true, and it's very important for our discussion. Here's another one. He was dealt a good hand in the poker game. Long time ago, the figure was established that we hold our cards, our set of cards in a game, and I'll play poker, it was just an example. In our hand, the figure was established that you could just say hand to refer to his set of cards. Does he have a good hand? Now, is that singular or plural? Let me ask you, if he held it in 2 hands, would you say he had a good hand? No. You still say he had a good hand, even though, like in Rook, you have a bunch of cards, sometimes it takes 2 hands. He's holding it in 2 little hands, but it still says he has a good hand. Now this rule, in every written debate I've ever seen, their whole doctrine is based on this rule. It's absolutely false. And I'm going to know one cup brother who made up this rule originally. The name of it. Okay? We can go on forever and ever on this. Forever and ever. To raise your children on the box. How many literal bottles? Well, it's more than one. The man started hitting the box. How many bottles did he drink from? Well, it's more than one. You only named one, but you're referring to the content of more than one. What if you had a rich man? Some doctors will have 2 houses close together on their property. 2 literal houses on their property. One for the children and one for them. I don't really know anybody personally like that, but I see people like that. Now, what if it was said about that doctor? Like it was said about Cornelius, he feared God with all his house. The house is metonymy, container for the content. In that case, he had 2 literal houses. But would you say he feared God with all his houses? No, because house, container for contents, really is talking about his family. You would say he feared God with all his house, singular, even though he had 2 literal houses.
And the same thing is true of the Lord's table, the cup of the Lord. You name one container to suggest the contents of how many containers? We just don't know. One or more, we don't know. And if you bind it, that's the problem. If you bind it, that's the problem. As a matter of fact, the very opposite of this rule is true. When you want to refer to the contents of more than one container, you would normally only name one container. For example, at a football banquet, caterers serve a Chinese dish on two plates. Would we say they serve the main dish or the main dish? We would just say main dish and name one container, though we're referring to food on two different literal plates. If a poker player holds his hot card with both hands, would we say he had a good hand or good hand? We'd say he had a good hand, even though he's holding it with two little hands. That's an economy, paying for the content. All of these are. She raised her children on the bottle. Would that probably say? We never say that. The man started hitting the bottle. We never say that. As I said, if you give me a year, I can think of 1,000 of these, George. 1,000 of these. Let's move on to the next chart. This probably spent too much time on that one. Then, I believe I'm looking at page 9B, according to my notes. Let's move on. It says, one cup is essential. Be at the top of page 9, because Jesus commanded it. This makes the use of one cup a positive law. You'll notice Jesus never did command one cup. He never did command it. Now, we're going to get to that in just a moment. First, let me skip down to C about the communion. He says this word communion, put it number 10, Tommy. This word communion demands share the same cup. That's just not true. When we share a meal, George, do we have to eat off the same platter? You know, me and you have one plate, we both eat off the same platter. You share a meal. What about if we share some rice? We have to eat it off the same platter. What about if me and you share a Coke? We'd still be sharing a Coke if we poured the Coke in two different glasses and drank it. Then we'd be sharing the Coke, wouldn't we? So the rule is not true, or this is not true, that communion, sharing, demands share the same cup. Thayer defines this word as joint participation, or sharing. We jointly participate or share in the Lord's Supper by eating together at the same time, just like we can share a common meal with someone by eating together at the same time without eating off the same platter, drinking out of the same container. We jointly at the same time remember Christ's death. It has nothing to do with sharing the same container. Where's there any indication of that? Where does it say that we share the same container? That's what I want to know. Next chart. Now we're going to get into the fact about Jesus commanding one cup. First of all, I'm looking up. Here's the place where George has admitted economy to be in. Remember, economy, contents of the container. You name the container, but you're suggesting the contents. You're talking about the contents. Luke 22:17, else you divide the container. Do you divide the container or the contents? 1 Corinthians 10:21, do you drink the container or the contents? 1 Corinthians 10:25, do you drink the container or the contents? It says drink the cup. What do? Drink the container or the contents. Drink the container or the contents. He agrees. Economy to be in there. Number 15. Now, where he got this command about using the one cup was in passages like Matthew 26:27. Basically, that's the passage he used to try to show that Jesus commanded one cup. But from Matthew 26:27 to Mark 14:23, by themselves, you cannot tell if the economy is being used or not. It could go either way. Everybody look at Matthew 26:27. It says, he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink ye all. Now, that could go either way. Cup could be referring to a container there. It could be my metonymy referring to the economy. It says he took the container and gave it. Well, it's not what it says, but it could mean it. He took the container, this is George, and she gave thanks and gave them, saying, drink ye all, in other words, out of the container. That's what George thinks. And here's something else it could mean. He took the fruit of the vine, remember, container the economy, and gave thanks and gave them, saying, drink ye all of the fruit of the vine. That could mean. You can't tell from this passage. Neither of Mark 14:23. But when you compare them to their parallels, you can tell what they're talking about. In Luke 22:17, it says, he took the cup, this is a parallel passage to both of these, and gave thanks and said, take this and divide it among yourselves. Do you divide the container? In any sense, in order to put the container and the contents together, do you divide it? No, you just divide the content. Now, I'm not asking how you divide it. You can get up here and say, well, you divide it by drinking it from it. That, you could do it that way. That's not what I'm asking. What is divided? Not how is it divided. What is divided? Is it the container or the content? It's the content. Everybody see that? This is the parallel passage to Matthew 26 and Mark 14. So when you look at Matthew 26, we can see then, number two, has to be the correct. Has to be. It's not a possibility. It has to be the correct understanding of the passage. He's not referring to the container at all, but he's referring to the content. Else, you divide the container. And everybody knows that's not true. Next chart. This chart will do the same thing. Basically make the same argument. Matthew 26:27, Mark 14:23, Luke 22:17. Now notice, here's the passage. He took the cup. We don't know if that cup is yet. He said, he gave thanks and said, take this and divide it among yourselves. Whatever that cup is something you divide. Now I ask you this question. Is the cup of Matthew 26, 27 and Mark 14, 23 the same cup as in Luke 22, 17? I think everybody here will agree with it. Yes, it is. Same cup. Then the cup of Matthew 26, 27 and Mark 14, 23 is something that you can divide. Since you cannot, or since you do not provide the container in any sense, then the cup of Matthew 26, 27 and Mark 14, 23 refers to the content only. So when Jesus comes to drink of the cup, he's referring to the content only, not to the container at all. If he's referring to the container, that means you have to divide the container. This isn't me saying this. This is what Jesus said in Luke 22, 17. He said, divide it from the cup. That's the same cup as in Matthew and Mark. Or is it, George? You think it's different? Same one. Now, I'm going to my own man and example. I don't know if he got the example.